Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back in, hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Titans training camp, and to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in the great Paul Kaharsky from PaulKaharsky.com and the Outkick 360 as well. PK, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. I went to look for something from your show tweeted. Do you not, in fact, have a show Twitter?
We do not have a show Twitter. We're getting Rex Rhodes just now able to execute a poll question on Twitter.
Oh, I see. Paul's been texting me about this. Oh, okay. In other words, a Twitter, like a Robbie and Rex Rhodes
yes.
Twitter. No, we do not have that, Paul. Is that okay?
No.
No, it's not okay.
All right. Yeah, I don't understand it, but have at it.
Paul, we appreciate you taking time to come on with us this morning. PK, look, we've talked a lot about the defense so far in training camp, and everybody wants to make sweeping judgments a week and a half into training camp. What has stood out to you the most on the defensive side of the ball? Do you put much stock into how well the defense has performed, especially the last couple of days while pads have been on?
I don't put as much stock into how good the defense has been as a lot of other people are putting into it for a couple reasons. I mean, the defensive line is obviously doing very well, so that's a big score for the defense. But I think it's important to note that the starting defense right now is going against an offense that in team periods never has Derrick Henry. Has had Julio Jones one period, I think, during which he got hurt. Doesn't have Jeff Swaim. Doesn't have Taylor Lewan. It's hardly the Titans' complete offense. And then as you get deeper, the type of guys in the middle of the Titans' offensive line, Cole Banwart, Chandon Herring, Christian Delario, these are not very good players as compared to Naquan Jones and Woodrow Hamilton. These back of the line interior defensive linemen are doing far, far better than their counterparts. The Titans interior offensive line depth is very bad. So that's a factor too in the good showing. I think the defense is better. But I've written, I think it's a little crazy for them to be talking so much about swagger and everything. Shane Bowen addressed it like, hey, we're practicing being confident, and I get that. But I don't know much how much swagger you could have before you prove to anybody that you could stop somebody on third down or record more than a sack every blue moon.
Well, you're a big don't overreact to what you see guy, which I think is largely the way to approach these things. But I will ask you on Dylan Raiduns, are you concerned at all with what you've seen?
Well, I'm disappointed that he's not better. I think this team is ridiculous with its expenditure of resources on the offensive line and at right tackle. That's three picks in the first two rounds in 6 years. And I'd like to see a guy who could start on opening day, and he clearly right now is not in position to do that. Ola Adeniyi, who's not going to play any outside linebacker for this team unless there's a disaster, blew by him yesterday. Joe, you probably saw the play. Would have killed Ryan Tannehill. That's a guy who's a special teamer, beating your second-round pick clean. That's a very discouraging play. And I thought that Kendall Lamb would be the starting right tackle at the beginning because the Titans slow play their early picks too much. But right now, they have to slow play him because he's not playing very well. And when Mike Vrabel comes right out and says, hey, we're not seeing enough, we need more, he'll have a good play and then he'll make the same mistake that he made earlier, that's a really bad review.
Paul Kaharsky from paulkaharsky.com and Outkick 360 on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. PK, you've obviously covered this team for a long time, and it has been, at times, a struggle to find two guys at wide receiver that you feel good about throwing the ball to. We've had some say that this is the deepest the Titans have ever been at wide receiver in terms of the competition. Do you buy into that? And what does your wide receiver room look like at the moment?
Well, at this stage, I buy into two guys for sure. So, you know, we're setting aside the top three, though I have concerns about Josh Reynolds. He didn't have any explosion to him when he was on the field during the OTAs and minicamp for whatever he participated in. He didn't have any explosion to him before he disappeared on Thursday or whenever it was that he dropped out. So there's injury concern there. You know, I'm not really worried about this Julio Jones thing. He'll be ready on opening day. And now he does, you know, you do worry about his injuries from last year. But the group after that is pretty nice and competitive, though this market tends to get carried away with the Byron Ealys and the Trey McBrides. The thing here is that it's a group instead of a guy. So I'm buying Marcus Johnson and Chester Rogers right now. They're getting a lot of opportunity because the guys who are out and they're productive. Chester Rogers, to me, should be the punt returner at this stage, and that would get him opportunities at wide receiver also. Second tier after that, Fitzpatrick and Rex Rhodes' guy, Westbrook Akina.
There you go.
Falling.
Very disappointed you haven't named him already.
He's fallen a lot from the number two position that Rex Rhodes should remain.
Oh, let's not even. Oh, all right.
Get him, Paul.
Yeah,
so
get
him.
Everybody should remain calm. Before the Titans made the Julio Jones move, everyone should remain calm because they were in good hands with Nick Westbrook.
That's exactly what I wrote. Exactly, word for word.
Now he's probably number six or seven. I would put Fitzpatrick and Westbrook Akina after Rodgers and Johnson, and then the Batsons and everybody else. But it is a much better group, a much more competitive group than we usually see. That said, they're catching passes in practice. You know, Caleb Farley hasn't been out there, so they're not going against the best quarterback crew in the world and the most cohesive cornerback group in the world yet. And there's still a lot of separation to go on in games against, you know, against competition. Let's see what they do down in Tampa Bay.
What do you think about the corner group, Paul? I almost feel like Tannehill just laid up a couple for Fulton to gain some confidence, but I think he's looked pretty decent. I think Jenkins is kind of like Malcolm Butler, but with some more speed, you know, in terms of the intensity out there. Jackson Borders, do you feel like there's at least more functional corners right now, even without knowing exactly what's going to happen with Farley?
Yeah, Borders has been really good, and I'm surprised because his lack of speed, like he was really good the first couple of days, but they're playing all red zone, and that favors him because there's less space. I thought when they got out into more space, he would have a harder time, but he's sustained it, so I like his scrappiness. Fulton's been just okay to me and needs to pick it up, and Vrabel's talked about his inconsistency. Jenkins has really come on, so that's encouraging, but I think the whole thing hinges on Farley. You know, he's going to transform the group and allow everybody to be in more appropriate slots. And I think when he's out there after just a week, I mean, that barring a setback, his timetable is certainly going to allow him to be out there on opening day and put guys in the proper spot. So it should be Jenkins and Farley starting, and then you have Molden and Fulton kind of either competing for nickel or giving you big nickel, little nickel options. And you've got some depth there with Borders behind him. Chris Jackson, I saw get roasted back-to-back. I mean, I think he's a good piece, but further down the line.
Paul, obviously the Titans seem to be pretty big believers in Anthony Firkser at this point. Are you buying that Anthony Firkser is a number one tight end in this league?
No. I mean, number one tight end in this league looks like Travis Kelce. Anthony Firkser and Travis Kelce have miles between them. I don't know why we're forcing the issue on that. Anthony Firkser can be good in what they do, but he's not going to be a number one wide receiver. I mean, a number one tight end. It's just silly talk. If you think he's going to be Travis Kelce, you're setting yourself up for giant disappointment.
Travis Kelce's the best tight end in the league.
Well, he just, I mean, people are talking. Like Kevin Byard said the other day, what did he say, Rex Rode? He
top flight tight end.
Top flight. Top flight.
Yeah. Well, that to me is ridiculous.
Well, right, but
that guy up to fail with a statement like that.
No, well, I agree, but the question was number one tight end, a starting tight end of one of 32 who could do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be he'll be fine as a starting tight end because they will scheme things up for him. But look, he'll catch balls at and beyond the sticks very smoothly. But Jonnu Smith ran past people and ran over people, and Anthony Firkser is not going to run past people or run over people, so it's very different. But also, you know, they should be. They ran 35% two tight ends last year. There's no way they should be running 35% two tight ends this year, given what they have at wide receiver now. So if that comes down 10%. You know, and Swaim can catch a few passes to keep people honest, and we have no idea what's up with Swaim. Could be a large reason why his stalker showed up, because Swaim is hurt. I think Firkser will be fine, but I think Titans fans are going a little crazy with just how good they expect him to be. And he's not, look, he can dig out a safety and deal with a blitzing cornerback. And maybe two or three times a game, he'll be more equipped to deal with a defensive end or blitzing outside linebacker. But should he be doing that regularly? Look, that's changing who he is. And the Titans are in the business of putting guys in position to do what they do well. I think if Anthony Firkser is in position to block those kind of guys, that's going to become something that offenses attack very, very regularly.
All right, let's talk Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame game tonight. Paul, how long have you been a voter?
Maybe 6 or 7 years.
Okay, I took major issue with what Delanie Walker said a few weeks ago because I buy that this market hurts guys in terms of incremental achievement or celebration, Pro Bowls, attention, all that stuff. But I feel like what you guys do in that room goes well deeper than any of that stuff. Do you buy the idea that, you know, like an Eddie George in a Steelers or Cowboys uniform is a Hall of Famer, or that the market you're in as a player can hurt you in that room?
Well, if Eddie George is on the Steelers and the Steelers are winning Super Bowls, then Eddie George has a better Hall of Fame resume.
No, but same exact outcomes.
Super Bowls.
Yeah, no, yeah, no, Super Bowls totally change it.
Doesn't change a thing. The market size has absolutely nothing to do with it. I mean, your marketing exposure has absolutely nothing to do with it. What Delanie said was ridiculous and grasping at straws. If Delanie wants to be upset with somebody for not having built more of a Hall of Fame resume, he should be upset with the 49ers for the first 4 years of his career where he was behind Vernon Davis and not catching any passes. That's four blank years of a resume where if he was used like he was used the rest of his career in Tennessee, he might have put up some numbers. But look, Eddie George is very reasonable. I've gone out with him and had the Hall of Fame conversation as to why I think he's a bit short on the Hall of Fame thing, and he understands it and can come to terms with the fact that he's a very good player who's a Titans Ring of Honor guy with his number retired, but not quite a Hall of Famer. And he's well ahead of Delanie Walker. So the guys just kind of lose perspective. This is where Delanie Walker's friends need to talk to him about, you know, context.
Text a buddy.
That's right. Text a buddy. Paul Kaharsky has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Does a great job covering the Titans for PaulKaharsky.com and a great job on Outkick 360 as well. PK, appreciate you taking time to join us this morning, brother.
Hey, good to be with you, and I can't wait for Joe's overdue Nick Westbrook Aquino piece.
Everyone
in the Titans press corps is waiting for this piece. I missed on Tierre Tart very badly, and I very quickly wrote about how I missed. And I'm the only person that does this, that writes opinion and then rewrites opinion and says my initial opinion was wrong.
Maybe in the world. You're only the person.
This is a disease. This is a disease in American sports journalism. Nobody writes something and then comes back and revisits it. They just move on to the next opinion. And I encourage everyone, led by Joe Rexroad, to adopt this strategy where you will actually circle back to your bad opinion and re-examine it. And Joe, this is my challenge to you. I'll send you the tier.
I can't wait.
If you want to see how it's done.
No, I'll send you the link to what I wrote so you can be accurate. And then
you put everyone at ease.
Hey, now listen to me. Now, if Westbrook Aquino,
Julio Jones, Nick Westbrook Aquino is going to be fine. They love him.
Hey, PK, this discussion is really going to be great when Westbrook Aquino doesn't make the team.
No, it's going to be awesome. If he doesn't make the team, I will not only write an apology. I will address it, an open letter to Paul Kaharsky.
Okay.
I will apologize profusely. Also, we'll get a nice show. Twitter account for you too, so you can follow it.
That's right.
I can't believe you don't have one, and then when your followers start at one, I mean, that's going to be a long climb.
You can help us, Paul.
That's right, PK. We appreciate you, man.
Follow.
Have a good rest of your day.
See ya.
Paul Kaharsky from PaulKaharsky.com and Outkick 360, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. We'll come back, react to what PK had to say there. Get your thoughts as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rexro here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Paul Kaharsky for joining us in the last segment.
And whining, as he always does.
I knew at some point the Nick Westbrook Aquino thing would come up, and I was 100% here for it. Loved it.
We basically scream at each other about it every day on the sideline. It's very entertaining for the entire press corps.
Sure that it is.
I mean, since we're on that topic.
Yes, we are.
Like, Paul has now built it up to, like, I wrote that Nick Westbrook Aquino is going to be a superstar in this league, and they should not have any of the receivers on the roster. A.J. Brown, Nick Westbrook Aquino, and that's it.
I know that. Now, in fairness, that is kind of where some people took it after you wrote. Now, you did not write it that way, but there are some people took that and ran with it as if, like, a Nick Westbrook Aquino was going to be the number two. It wasn't just Paul.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was never the case. I never wrote he was going to be the number two. Now, I will say, on Westbrook Aquino's part, you know, I'd say he needs to make more plays to make the team. I thought he was a pretty solid bet to make the team starting camp. And some of these guys have really, really made tough cases. Rodgers and Johnson agree, 88 and 80 out there. And Rodgers, because it makes the most sense. I mean, the only other guy who could make the team who's catching punts right now is Cam Batson.
Yep.
I would put Chester Rodgers flat out ahead of Cam Batson right now. He looks really good making plays. He's a veteran. He's made plays in this league before. I still think Westbrook Aquino and Racy McMath have an edge as – you know, core special teams guys who make the team because of that as well, but he's got to make more plays. And if he doesn't make the team, hey, I will revisit that. But again, the difference in what Paul's talking about is that he had an opinion. I don't remember what it was. He like said Tierre Tart sucks or whatever. And then Tart last year came on, and Tart, by the way, looks really good every day in practice.
Offseason winner.
Tierre Tart is going to be on the field some for this defense. But so he revisited his opinion, right? Said he was wrong. We're all wrong sometimes. I had no expectation at all that Nick Westbrook Aquino would ever be brought up. And it was brought up to me by a good source who said that they love him and that they feel better about the receiver depth because of him. And so I was like, really? And I wrote it. So it wasn't my opinion. I wrote something. I got good information. I mean, unless this source was just lying to me and trying to create this situation we have now. I don't know, maybe.
Well, I'm glad they did.
Well, I mean, he's still – look, man, after you watch Westbrook Aquino last year in camp, couldn't catch a cold.
Right.
And so I was like, well, good seeing you. More good Indiana football for everyone to enjoy. And then they had him around, and then he's out there getting reps in games. And I'm like, what am I missing about this guy? So it does kind of add up. They like him a lot. He's in a fight, though.
Oh, he's in a fight, that's for sure. Marcus Johnson, Chester Rogers. Like, both of those guys making plays every day. We talked about a guy like Cam Batson. Like, I think it's going to be a challenge for Cam Batson to make the team at this point.
Going in, I had him not, but I had him keeping six. If they keep seven, I still have Batson not making it at this point. Cody Hollister, he's out there. He gets reps, but he's not going to make the team. And you count Dez Fitzpatrick as a given,
right?
A fourth-round pick. So, okay, there's four that you know for sure. It's very interesting.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Ben texting in, after listening to PK, I think the Titans fans are overestimating just how dominant this offense will be this season. There's concern at right tackle, Lawan coming off a serious injury, the question marks at wide receiver after AJ and Julio, and probably most of all, how will the loss of Arthur Smith affect their play calling?
Well, certainly. The last point is a lot of the story this year, but I think it's going to be pretty good. You know, the right tackle thing has to be worked out. The good news is Tyson Brallo's back now.
Yep.
So he has given you pretty solid play. Questenberry has given you pretty solid play. Lamb's in. And, yes, Ray Dunn's right now does not look good.
How concerning is that?
Well, he doesn't look good. In pass protection, he's getting chewed up a fair amount. Now, said it earlier in the show, I don't remember being all that impressed with Nate Davis 2 years ago in camp. And Jameel Douglas, who's not good, beat him out and was your starting right guard. And then everybody remembers the game in Jacksonville where Jameel Douglas was just a turnstile. And that was one of the worst, probably one of the worst nights ever for a Titans offensive team, along with the Denver game that would come a couple weeks later. Nate Davis, by the end of that year, you're like, wow, he's actually pretty good. And now he's more than that. So it's way too early to, you know, throw in the towel or say, uh-oh, bad pick. But he's got a ways to go.
Right. And, you know, he's a second-round pick, though. Like,
yeah,
you need a second-round pick to come in and at least threaten to start. Right, and it doesn't sound like he's even threatening to start at the moment.
No, I would not say he is. And that's look, to PK's point there, you're talking about a first-round pick, a first-round pick, a second-round pick in three different drafts out of six drafts at right tackle.
Yeah.
That is a lot. And now the first one of those was a good pick. You know, Jack Conklin was really good, and he's still really good. And would still look really good in your uniform.
He would.
But he got away. Obviously, we know about the second of those picks and how that went. And, look, if Ray Dunn's is just a complete non-factor as a rookie, and I'm not willing to say he will be, but if he is, that's a problem. Second-round pick.
Yeah, that's a good way to get out the door if that continues to happen with your picks high in the draft. I mean, it just is. And, you know, Caleb Farley's his own thing. We talked about his injuries, by the way. How's he looking out there?
He looks great.
That's good.
I mean, again, like he's not tackling. Right. He's not in team, but change of directions, explosiveness, size, at speed, smooth. I mean, yes, he looks like a dude for sure.
Adam Vingan texting in, Nick Westbrook Schiatica, combining the name. Thank you, Adam. Appreciate that. I can't wait for the Nick Westbrook Akina watch to continue. This preseason and training camp. It may be now what I'm looking forward to the most.
That poor guy had no idea what he was in for.
He did not.
Become a media darling / just like a polarizing name.
That is correct. When we come back, we'll switch gears, get into the Tennessee Volunteers a little bit. Also address Jared Stillman taking a shot at Joe Rexroad as well. That coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This Friday, it's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick to Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game Sunday, you win a prize pack and a four-pack of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Participate this Friday morning at 9:45. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Speaking of Nashville SC and Nashville SC picked a click. No correct answers yesterday. No goals.
See, Michelle was all mad. I took your guy, and yeah, it often doesn't matter.
Robbie started off the segment by saying, Joe had specific instructions, Michelle.
That is correct.
Oh, I heard you. I heard you guys. I heard Michelle get mad at me.
Yeah. I just did what I was told. Don't blame me.
I mean, we can set rules that I have to be sitting here to make the pick. That's fine.
New rule. I get to pick before Joe next time.
Yeah, we rotate it.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, we do?
Yeah, we rotate it.
Yeah. But I have one, right? Do I have one?
You have one.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm already fine.
She has one. I have zero.
And the listeners have three.
That's correct.
That's actually pretty amazing.
It's an insurmountable lead.
Potentially. I mean, I know it's the same, like, four or five names, but still, that's pretty good.
Oh, all right. Jared Stillman just tweeted, by the way. Quote, coming up next, Jared Stillman took a shot at Joe Rexroad.
I don't even know that he took – I guess he didn't really take a shot, actually.
It was your column.
Yeah, so, okay, first of all, let's just go through. Now, we've had – my gosh, what an hour. PK, and I got Jared all over me. Okay, so first of all, Jared was hate texting me during the last segment. I was ignoring it. Nate Davis got hurt the first day of camp 2 years ago, so that's a good point. I'd forgotten that. He didn't practice much. But even early in the season, like when Nate Davis was playing early in his career as a rookie, he looked like a rookie at times, right? I mean, I'd say Nate Davis.
Well, he certainly didn't look like he looked last year, that's for sure.
Oh, and even at the end of that year, I would say. And the point being, you know, you have to give it a little bit of time there. This is a lot of stuff to figure out to play at this level and be able to block NFL defenders. Ray Duns is not there right now. You know, you got to see if he can accelerate things. Jared also said, Farley doesn't do anything. Let me count the exclamation points. Four. Farley doesn't do anything. Well, Jared, Robbie asked me how he looks. If you watch him in drills running around, you don't think he's smooth, fast, has good change of direction, good hips, has good size. I mean, I just said he's not in team, but how's he look? Yeah, he looks like a talented cornerback who might go in the first round of a draft.
See what happens when he starts tackling people.
Yep.
Now, what happened yesterday, and Jared on his show was discussing the Tennessee Vols, and of course, we talked about it, your article that you put up at The Athletic, basically highlighting Josh Heupel, how he handled media day, and what the benefits could be to having open access to his team, and kind of Josh Heupel's viewpoint on that. We played the audio from that yesterday as well, and I guess Jared took from that, if that's what's coming out of media day, that kind of shows you where this Tennessee football team is and that there should not be very much excitement about this Tennessee team at that point.
So if there's a column about, you know, what Cade Mays will be doing up front or, you know, a column about like Jabari Small stepping into the starting run, does that mean that there's more excitement? I mean, I try to find different stuff anyway, and I was struck. If you went to previous UT media things under Pruitt, which were bad, and then you went to this, it was striking the difference. And I guess I tried to get into, what does that matter? I think it does. How much does it ultimately matter, winning and losing? I think, you know, selling your program can help you in a lot of ways, but you still have to take a few steps before you get there. That was the most interesting thing to me. I think Jared's taking quite a leap there. Now, he may be right about just interest, though. I mean, I don't know. You can speak to this better than anyone as someone who grew up a Tennessee fan. I feel like in the next few weeks, people are going to see Joe Milton throwing the ball, and they're going to see Velus Jones catching the ball, and they're going to, oh, Juwan Mitchell looks like a guy at linebacker. That's a big help. And I think that there's still going to be pretty high level of excitement.
Yes.
But relative to what it has been, certainly. I think a lot of especially people on the fence have fallen off.
Well, I can tell you exactly what's going to happen. And especially if Tennessee finds a way to win against Pittsburgh, probably going to be 3-0 at that point, most likely. If you can beat Pittsburgh, you're probably going to be 3-0 with Bowling Green and Tennessee Tech rounding out the first half of your schedule. And then you go to Florida, and I can already tell you, if they're 3-0 going into Florida,
oh boy,
all Twitter's going to be a buzz. I'm telling you, yeah, it's going to happen. Now, I've developed a little bit more realism over the course of the past decade, and I recognize that you can coach these guys up as well as you want to. At some point, talent matters, and they just don't have a lot of it. They don't have a lot of it offensively. They have way less of it defensively on this team. And that, at the end of the day, I think there's a certain ceiling that this team has that's going to be pretty hard for them to hit. And I think that ceiling is probably somewhere around 7 wins. I think that's going to be a huge challenge to get to 7 in their schedule. I know, though, how Tennessee football works, and I know that as game one comes around, especially if that offense lights up Bowling Green, which should not be that difficult of a task, the hype train is going to get going at that point, and there will be excitement. I guarantee you. I've seen this story over and over and over again.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Now, Jared is talking right now. Like, he's talking about right now camp. Camp starting. I guess he detects that the excitement is way down from – Well, but it's also a
I think
first
it's different.
Year.
I think the excitement is different because a lot of the excitement right now is who's going to play quarterback, right? I mean, that's what every Tennessee fan is excited to see, who is going to play quarterback. I think Jared is right from the standpoint of the excitement about the overall expectations for this team is way down. And I talked about it yesterday. This is a beaten down fan base at this point.
No doubt.
And there is a lot of work that Josh Heupel is going to have to do to get that reversed. That's why I thought at the time when Danny White made the comments about, hey, keep the negative stuff to yourself on social media and text a friend, like, I thought that was a really stupid thing to say because this fan base has been through a lot in the last 12 years. They're not going to be quiet on social media. That's what Tennessee fans are. It's a big following. So rather than taking that approach, why don't you give them a reason to not complain on social media? Give them a reason to be excited.
Oh, yeah. More than fair. And I think Danny White, I haven't seen a lot of that from him lately. But yeah, that was a misstep. And maybe hiring Josh Heupel was a misstep. I mean, we didn't like it on that day. I still have the same concerns. But I do feel better about Heupel. And that is one area that I think does matter, and he's been impressive. But I think just in overall his messaging, how he, you know, really just how he interacts with people. We talked about it yesterday a lot. Is a positive. Is that enough to get Vols fans excited? No, I mean, like you said, it's a beaten down fan base. But it is a normal, we hope, football season coming here. You got an offense that you probably want to watch and could not possibly not improve on last year's offense. And there's still some good, talented players in that program. So I think that it's still a pretty fair amount of preseason excitement as long as you're not comparing. Like if you're comparing it to other fan bases and their teams, okay, it's not comparable to, you know, great teams, but I still say there's probably more people who are interested in following along with what the Vols are doing than all but, I don't know, 15 programs in the country. I'd put it right around there.
Yeah, I would say that's fair, but that's always going to be the case with Tennessee. I mean, that's just what it is.
But I'm saying even with, I'd say, especially maybe your fringe people kind of falling off, like, you know what, yeah, call me when you're good again. Yeah. I hear that from a lot of people. I mean, I think they've lost some people. There's some apathy, and you hate apathy. Even with that, right now, with the sanctions looming and all the crap that's gone on and no super excitement about Heupel, I still say you are not going to find many college football programs who have even close to this many people who care.
Well, it's a gigantic fan
on.
Base, right? Yeah. It's a gigantic fan base. I mean, there are millions of people that follow this program. So, I mean, when you have that, there's always going to be a built-in level of interest and excitement. Now, again, I think Jared has a point from, like, think about the excitement level even in Pruitt's first year. You'd just gotten Butch out of there. You got the guy from Alabama coming in. Like, I thought there was more excitement than in Pruitt's first year than there is right now.
Agree. At that point, there was still, I mean, yes, no, for sure. And, you know, with each failure, it gets harder.
It gets
harder to get off the floor,
yes.
Right?
Taylor from Fort Campbell texting in on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Harrison Bailey needs to be the starter. Go Vols.
Why is that?
We get like five of those every day, and the funny part about them, they're all usually a different guy. Joe Milton. Had one vote for Brian Maurer a couple weeks ago. Needs to be the starter.
That's the one that would shock me.
Yes.
I would not be shocked with any of the other three, but look, at this point, the evaluation is on right now. So whoever needs to be the starter is who runs this offense best. But I'm intrigued by Joe Milton, and my initial reaction was, no, you don't want him. He was terrible last year. But the thumb thing is, how do you ignore torn ligaments in your throwing hand and what that will do to a player? The very first game, and Minnesota wasn't great last year, although PJ Fleck's done good things with that program. But if you go back and watch Joe Milton in Michigan at Minnesota in the opener last year, he looked every bit of the hype. And you want to talk about hype? Michigan football players, there's a lot of September Heismans in that program.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next week, he was awful against Michigan State, and he made terrible decisions. But apparently, it happened right around then. So, you know, you look at it through that lens, he's intriguing.
6'5", 244. What Joe Milton's listed at.
And if, Blake Tottmeyer is a good point, pushing the ball down the field. If that's a high priority in this offense, he certainly can do that. It's going to be interesting. But look, I don't count out Bailey. I think Harrison Bailey, young guy who got thrown in as a true freshman, and that rarely lives up to the hype. I still think he's got a lot to offer.
Coming up next, we've got our best and worst thing in sports for the week. We'll get to that coming up on the other side. Take your thoughts as well. What's your best and worst thing in sports this week? Hit up our text line at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nashville SC fans, join ESPN 94.9 this Monday, August 9th, from 7 to 8 p.m. for NSC Backstage, featuring Nashville SC players and coaches. Watch the show online via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. NSC Backstage, brought to you by Camarena Tequila, the official tequila of Nashville SC. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you, discussing the best thing in sports and the worst thing in sports for this week. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad, would you like to lead us off with your best and worst things in sports for this week?
Okay, so we're starting this out, so we're kind of trying to figure this out. So do best and worst.
Sure.
Or best.
Well, you want to go best around and then worst around?
I don't know.
Best around and then worst around.
Best around and then worst around?
Yeah. I second that. Let's do it that way.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So your best thing in sports.
Best thing. Always a lot of good choices. I'm going local with mine. And I'm going in an area that, frankly, I think this is an obligation in general. I think that this is something that you absolutely should do if you're in a position to play sports professionally, that you should give back to your community. And it doesn't necessarily need to be celebrated a lot, but a lot of people do a lot of things. Taylor Lewan was up there yesterday talking about his wife, Taylan, and the work she's done, in terms of trying to feed the less fortunate. There's a lot of that goes on. It's admirable. Again, I also think it's what you should be doing if you're in that position. But I look at Kevin Byard and his wife, Clark. They unveiled the Davidson County Department of Children's Services Safe Room Sunday, a space to reduce trauma for children who come into custody for child abuse and or child neglect. And just listening to Byard talk about that and knowing that he's one of those guys who goes above and beyond in these things in general, I thought that was really impressive and a really worthwhile cause. So credit to the Byards for that. That's very cool, very needed. I think in any cases where you can, address and help underserved, underprivileged, abused children, I don't know how many things would be more important than that.
Absolutely. Very well said on that front. Michelle, do you have a best thing in sports this
Yes,
week?
Joe Rexroad, warming everyone's hearts this morning. That's
it's
awesome.
Gonna be hard
I
to
didn't
follow
see
that.
Yeah, so the first one I chose is just a funny one, but I got a sound clip for it, and it's a training camp, and then I have like a real nice heartfelt one as well. So this is a little Tigers action for you, Joe.
Uh-oh. Really?
The Detroit Tigers?
Okay, wait.
I can play some Hall & Oates in the meantime if you need it.
So normally what I do is I'll get two venti. I go to, you know, Starbucks. I get two venti of the pipe with two shots in them. So black eye in both. That's what I come in with. That's how I start the day. So, well, to normally.
Anytime we could get Dan Campbell, Detroit Lions coach, on the show, we're in good hands here.
Yes. So that's coffee order every morning, he said, before training camp.
That's a lot of coffee, man.
That is unreal.
So 80 ounces of coffee and four shots of espresso, right?
Yeah.
And the pike is the most intense roast plus espresso. That's just wow.
It's kind of amazing he's not bouncing through the wall every day. No wonder he started talking about, you know, biting off people's kneecaps to begin camp. You're that fired up on coffee.
Right?
You're going to say some things.
Yeah.
He needs his presser before practice, right after the coffee.
Yeah.
He'd be ready for it. So that was my funny one of this week. And then
I love it.
My other really good thing in sports was Simone Biles went on. Obviously, there's been a lot, you know, surrounding her and everything that's happened in Tokyo. But she went on with Hoda on NBC and essentially just shed a lot of light on, you know, the stress and the pressure that athletes are faced, especially her in on such a big stage. And I think she took her platform, kind of like you said, these athletes, they have such big platforms, and she made it a point to just really shed a light on mental health and let people know that it's okay. And I think that it could have been really easy for her to be like, oh, I twisted my ankle or something over in Tokyo, but she was very open about it and said, you know what, I was not in the right headspace, which is very hard to tell the entire world when the whole world thinks you're going to win gold on everything and doesn't think you can ever make a mistake. So I just thought that Simone Biles has done an amazing job over the last, you know, couple days, couple weeks, really shedding light on what's important and taking a step back from her sport and realizing that she needs to make sure she's okay and telling other people out there that it's okay to do that.
Yeah, well said. I mean, and for people, again, who don't understand, like, not being in the right headspace in that sport, what that can mean, Google the twisties.
Y'all both went very serious with yours. Mine is not.
I did a little of both.
Mine is not. The best thing in sports, for me, by far, right now, the public war of words between Aaron Rodgers and Brian Gutekunst.
Oh, yeah.
It is amazing. Aaron Rodgers adding a little bit more to it yesterday, you know, last week describing, he was asked to describe his relationship with Gutekunst. He said, quote, I would say professional at this point. And then yesterday was asked about apparently having a conversation with Gutekunst on the sideline at Packers training camp and said, yeah, that relationship's a work in progress. And then went on to discuss how you build good relationships in life and just the public awkwardness of Aaron Rodgers and Brian Gutekunst right now for the entire world to see. It's been pretty amazing the last couple of weeks. I enjoy it.
That's lovely.
At least he's being honest.
Keep continuing.
Oh, it's going to be quite the year for Aaron Rodgers press conferences. I'm here for it. All right, the worst thing in sports. Joe Rexrode, your worst thing in sports for the week.
And it's the week, but it's more than the week. But just big umbrella here, realignment in college athletics. At this point, you got to embrace Texas and Oklahoma. The SEC is going to be the strongest conference. Various sports are going to be better. Football is going to be better. Hey, great TV, playoff expanding, whatever. That's all fine. You restore rivalry. Texas A&M, right? There's things you can find. But just in general, I mean, you think about a very small group of people who in another time of American history would be like corporate lawyers. And they are now running college athletics. And they are getting extremely rich. And they are doing these things to further enrich themselves and others who employ them. That's what this is about. And it's really just complete disregard of the people who allow you to be rich, which would be the fans of college sports. So I don't think we should ease up on these people. I understand Greg Sankey did his job. It's way better to win this than to lose it and watch them go somewhere else. But in general, it sucks.
Michelle, your worst thing in sports for the week.
So this one hits home because you two both know I went to Syracuse. So this week, well, it's kind of been months in the works, but I covered the Syracuse women's basketball team heavily the last 2 years, and since March, they've had about 11 transfers and a lot of accusations surrounding their head coach. And this week, he officially stepped down, but there have been a lot of articles since then uncovering a lot of things that have been hidden by the administration, student-athletes submitting letters 10 years ago addressing behavior by the coach. Obviously, you are innocent until proven guilty, and these are all accusations right now, but there's been a lot of articles just surrounding bad behavior by the coach, and just kind of sad when you cover a team for so long and you see only one side of it and you think it's a positive side, and then all of this kind of comes out, you realize, oh, you had no idea what was actually happening in the program, and you really don't know what goes on, and you really are only seeing that one side of it. So just kind of sad to see all of that pan out this week. And obviously it's a long road ahead to see actually what is going to happen. But he stepped down, and then the associate head coach will now be coaching for this season.
Did you like him when you covered him?
Yeah, I loved him. I interviewed him before every game. We would do segments weekly. Very positive, very media friendly. The media in Syracuse, the local media, they were who you wanted to cover. And the team's been successful. They had a great team this year. And to be honest, I was completely blown away when all the transfers started happening back in March, April. To be honest, completely shocked. And I've worked very closely with the team for the last 2 years. So.
It's quite a story.
Yeah, absolutely. My worst thing in sports, very quickly, training camp hits, especially violent training camp hits, and I'm referring specifically to the incident in Carolina. JT Ibe kicked off the team in Carolina. Receiver Keith Kirkwood for the Panthers had to be put on a backboard and taken to a hospital for a training camp hit earlier this week that stopped practice. Matt Rhule and company had to kick Ibe off the field. They had to bring the ambulance out, the backboard out, and Kirkwood in the hospital now, Ibe cut. You know, football is a very physical game, and obviously, unfortunately, things like this happen sometimes. I think it's tougher when things like this happen in practice, and there's nothing really game-wise actually on the line. For something like that to happen on your own team, it feels like it happens at least once every year where somebody takes a hit they probably shouldn't take, and probably an example of why Mike Vrabel was so mad yesterday at Brady Breece for the shot on Des Fitzpatrick. But you hate to see guys get hurt in practice, especially, even though football is a very violent game.
I like
training
that.
Camp injuries.
Yeah.
Those are tough.
They're awful. Oh, that was good. I like that segment.
Yeah. I like the segment, too.
Keep it.
We're going to keep it.
Keep it?
Oh, we're going to keep it.
Tell us in the text line.
We're going to buy it.
That's a buy?
We are buying the best and worst thing in sports.
Jim said he liked it on the text line. Yeah.
Jim texting in, best thing in sports, the Olympics. Worst thing, NBC's putrid coverage, making it almost impossible to find or watch the Olympics.
That's a very good best and worst.
I
agree.
Not been great for NBC with their coverage of the Olympics. When we come back, we will stay in the Titans division. We will talk to Michael DeRocco, ESPN Jags reporter, and get an update on Urban Meyer and company down in Jacksonville. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big.